Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. We welcome you to the Metron Live podcast, coming to you live from Metron in historical and beautiful Midtown Atlanta. Metron people, give the podcast people a welcoming hand. We love the YouTube people. We love the podcast people. There's something about the final installment of a series. I don't know why. It just seems to always be the best. Spirit seems to hold the best for last. Our title for this month's series is Free Your Mind and the Rest Will Follow, Healthy Thinking and Prospering as Your Soul Prospers. I want to go back and look at, there's a verse of scripture in Proverbs. I've talked about it before. I don't think I've ever used these particular passages. I want to look at it in two different ones. It's Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23 out of the Passion Translation. And it says, "So above all, guard the affections of your heart, for they affect all that you are." This is where in the King James it says, guard your heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. And I love this next sentence here, how he translated it. It says, pay attention to the welfare of your innermost being, for from there flows the wellspring of life. I love this. It says, pay attention to the welfare of your innermost being. When people say, you know, I'd love to take better care of myself, but I just don't have time. Look, you don't have time not to take care of yourself. You know, when you're on a plane, and if there's ever trouble with, you know, turbulence, or if they will tell you, if you're a parent with a child, they tell you to put the mask on yourself first, even though your instinct is to help the child first. But the idea is, if you're not okay, the child's not going to be okay. And there's such a truth to that. Taking care of yourself, whether it's just taking time off, taking a mental health day. You know, we did a challenge one time about just even doing things for yourself, like spa therapies, that sort of thing. That's not just indulgences. That's not just the luxury lifestyle. Those are things you do for your spirit. And ultimately, it's an act of unselfishness, because the better you are, the more you have to help other people who are depending on you. Let me tell you something. When you're ministering, however you minister, when you're ministering out of your own deficiency or your own hurt, your own spirit is wounded, you can't help other people. That's why I used to tell, when I was mentoring young ministers, especially the ones that would be doing their first sermons, I would tell them, I said, look, it's fine. I know you've put a lot of time in studying for this, and you want to get all of your stuff, and that's good. Preparedness is important. But it's equally important that you just feel good about what you're going to talk about. Because if you stay up all night and work on this outline until you're just exhausted, you're going to have the mechanics of it, but you're not going to have the life to be able to minister to people. So, you know, get a general idea of what you're going to talk about, but it's just good that you feel good. It's what you give to people when you talk to them. You know, what is that quote that says, people might not remember what you said, but they'll remember how you made them feel? And there's certain people that just when you're around them, you just already feel better. Like, well, I just feel better being with them. I don't want to just make this all about Sean. And Larry does a great job singing with her and being there. I think he's really the strength behind her talent. I think she would agree with that. But it looked like you were having a good time Tuesday night. I felt like you were having a good time. And that makes everybody relax and have a good time. It's like, well, I didn't. And that's what a professional is supposed to do. Like, I remember that jazz thing we went to a couple of years ago over in West End somewhere. The woman who was emceeing it, remember, she came out and yelled at everybody because they people we were video and everything. And I could tell when she reprimanded everybody, it brought the room down. It was just like, yikes, we're just like, easy, lady. That's the kind of thing you should have said at the beginning. If there was a, you should have said, and don't just come out and yell at us when we're already grooving to the music, and you're like, yeah, excuse me, Mrs. English teacher, and it was cool because I watched Chandra Cattell, and she came out and she just said, y'all go ahead and video, like she brought the room back up, and I thought that's what a professional does instead of making everybody feel bad. There's a way you can say it without losing your audience. You got to know how to read a room, and you can. I'm open to instruction, but you got to. I don't respond to being yelled at. You start yelling at me, you've already lost me. It's like if you're trying to communicate some message to me, I've already shut you out because I have a defense mechanism about being yelled at. And I mean, even Jesus comes in and yells at me. I'd be like, Jesus, no. I can't. It doesn't work for me. And because Jesus didn't yell at people, I can say that. I love that Isaiah 58, where he talks about this is the fast that I've chosen. And he says to fast from the putting forth of the finger. And that doesn't mean giving somebody the finger. It means doing that. You know what I mean? Like, you ought to do that. But my point is, I don't get to sit in audiences a lot, you know, when I just watch one performer on stage. And I'm always interested to see how people respond to, like, certain setbacks or whatever they have. I've gotten a lot better about it. It used to be, back in the day, I was too easily distracted. And in my defense, I used to deal with a lot. I mean, good Lord. If there is such a thing as religious spirits, Rockdale County was full of them. And I'd be up ministering, and you know, I used to have people in the audience sometimes that'd be going. And I think, I'm trying to ignore you, but you're really working my nerve. That doesn't kind of happen now. It's one thing I like about being in a dark theater. I can't. If you're back there scowling at me, I can't see. But the point is, what I'm trying to say is, take care of yourself. Choose your battles. There's some things that, negative conversations that people try to pull you into, that it ain't worth it, Miss Seeley. I mean, just don't do it. Don't do it, because you can make your point. And all you're going to do is stress yourself out, not influence them at all. All they're going to do is double down and argue back to you. And it's just better to, like Jesus said, agree with your adversary quickly. And save the confrontation for the things that really matter. Because here's the thing, and I've said this before. I would never tell anybody what to do on your social media platform. But if you stay in confrontation mode with every post, it takes away the impact for when you really need to make a point. Because I can tell you, there's some people I look at, and I can see they're ranting about something. I just scroll them by because I think they always got some drama going on, and I just don't have time for it today. I don't have time to stop and read your drama. Where if it's somebody that drama is rare for them, then I might stop and think, well, all right, this must be something serious I need to read about. If somebody's just barking at the moon all the time, you just tune them out. So you gotta know how to, you know, yes, say, I mean, believe me, I've lived my life saying what I really thought about things. I've never shied away from that. But a little bit of that goes a long way, and you got to know your audience, and you got to know when you've said enough and when it's time to shut up and when it's time just to agree with people how they are. I had posted this picture of me being consecrated, and I woke up early this morning. I'm so sensitive. I just feel when somebody's posted something that I don't like. I just feel it. And I got up. It was like 5:30, I got up and I looked at my phone, and sure enough, somebody, sweet guy that I know from Nashville, never been to church once, but I know he meant well, but he wrote something really negative about, you know, that looks really pagan, and no man can I think he meant ordained, but he said, no man can ordinate you. And I thought, well, at least learn your word. Ordinate's not a word. But anyway, whatever. And I know he meant well, but it was just, this is what it'd be like. It's like somebody coming into your house and doing something nasty in your living room and just leaving it there. That's all I'm going to say. And you know what I mean? You'd be like, I'm going to have to clean that up. I can't just leave that. And I can't let them come back in my house. How do you not know better than just to come in my living room and do your thing, whatever your thing is, fill in the blanks. And that's the way I feel about, I mean, I didn't argue with him because, like I said, I'm sure he meant well. But I thought, you kind of stunk up my Instagram account. My Instagram's, when you go to my Instagram, it's like there's birds singing and you hear the ocean and there's pretty colors and, you know, it's like, I don't like that. And there's no point in me arguing with you about me being ordinated. I was just like, I'm just going to delete that and I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt. Namaste. Go with God. Don't come in and poop all over my Instagram again. Okay? Because I don't enjoy that. I don't want to fight with you about stuff. I don't want to. I've learned this. I can win arguments and still not win hearts. I've argued with people about the Bible. I know you know it. Like you've made your point, and they'll surrender. Like, yeah, I guess you're right. That is what the Bible says. But it doesn't change them. What'd you say? Yeah, exactly. They didn't, right. You did not win their heart. And so it's better just to influence people and just, you know, when they, as has been quoted before, when they go low, just go high. That's just the better way to do it. You always win. All right, let me show you this out of the, what is this? This is, CEV is the, it's not concordant literal, it's, I can't remember what it stands for. It's the CEV. It's the CE's version. And it says, carefully guard your thoughts because they are the source of true life. I like that because the word in the Hebrew, sometimes it's translated hearts, but it's also translated as thoughts. Heart and thought are very interchangeable. Like if you you look in the Kabboris manuscript under Matthew 6, where he says, where your treasure is, your heart will be also. In the Aramaic, it says, where your treasure is, your thoughts will be. Whatever you think about is what you'll give money to. So, yes, you love it, but also you think about it. Thoughts and heart, thought, it's all interchangeable. And like I know I belabored this point last week, but let me revisit it again. Prayer is fine. Whatever your concept of spiritual warfare is, if you think you're fighting demons, fine. I'm not going to argue with you about that. But let me tell you, Jesus himself could come and live in the house with you. If you don't change your thoughts, your life is not going to improve. All the scriptures in the world, the best sermons in the world, praying and fasting, nothing is going to change your life until you change the way you think. Not the way you pray, the way you think. Because I've prayed with people my whole life, and I can tell you, prayer doesn't change the way people think. Something that Joe Dispenza said when I went to his that weekend months ago, I so related to this and have said the same thing. He said that sometimes in these seminars, I'll be talking about changing your thoughts, and somebody will come see me, say, but you don't know what, you know, my mother's 90 years old, and she's got dementia, and they'll tell. And he says, I'm not denying that you live. I'm saying you have to change the way you think. And he said, it's like they paid the money for this thing and didn't hear a word I said. And I'm like, I feel you, Dr. Joe. Because how many times this doesn't happen now, but back in church days, people come up and they tell me their thing. And I'd say, okay, let's pray. And I'd take their hands and I'd pray with the spirit and with the understanding. I'd pull down, I'd pluck up. I'd pray the scriptures, I'd plead the blood, I'd There's like nothing I left unturned, no stone left unturned. And I'd wrap it up with clutch in their hands, strong, and real powerful, in the name of Jesus. And they would go right back into. So anyway, then she said, and I thought, how could you possibly? And I think I just completely wasted. I even spoke in tongues for you. Tongues? That didn't even work. I mean, I did like dramatic tongues, like rolled the R and everything. You know, that didn't work. Are you kidding me with this? Like, what the heck? And it makes you it makes you cynical about praying for people, because you think, well, you're not, you just wanted some attention for a few minutes. Nothing changed. Now if I'm going to pray with you and you have confidence in what I prayed, and then you say, okay, well then that's it, let's believe for the best, then I didn't waste my time. But if my prayer was just a chance for you to catch your breath before you went back into another 45 minutes of telling me this thing that you've already told me several times, I mean, it's not going to make me pray any harder, you know, like, you know, what, come on. And that's why, if anybody thinks I don't believe in prayer, it's not that. It's just that I know if prayer is not changing your thinking, it's not helping you anyway. Now, right, that devotional is very, very popular. Everybody had it when I was in college. My utmost for his highest. It's a good devotional. It's very austere. The man that wrote it was a Scottish no-nonsense man, and it's harsh. But he did say one thing in there that was, it was worth me using the book. He said, don't pray that God changes things. Pray that God changes you and you change things. And I said, okay, that right there, I can put up with all the other religious stuff you said, because that, it's what we used to call the kingdom message, you know, but now we've taken it even further to realize I'm making everything happen. It doesn't mean I don't believe in God. It means I believe that I have a creator that created after his own kind, her own kind, its own kind. Whatever your concept of God is, let us create people in our image. But it's that we change it. Now, you can still give God the glory. Yesterday, we went to the mall, and I said, I need a parking place. Sure enough, everybody in the world was at the mall yesterday. Just as we pulled up, somebody pulled out. I said, there it is. But we said, won't he do it? Like, we'll give Jesus the credit. But Jesus didn't, you know, I said it. You know what I mean? And furthermore, Jesus wanted me to say it. That's the whole point. What's that? Yes, let's just take dominion. And I'm just going to say this. There's too much praying going on and too many people opting out of their personal responsibility. And let me tell you about personal responsibility. Once you take it, you own your life. I mean, I could look at mistakes that I make that I think, well, I did that. I brought that on myself. And surely goodness and mercy followed me all the days of my life and got me out of it. And somehow all things worked together for good. So, yes, I will give God that. Something good came out of it. But I made that happen. And the more you do that, the less inclined you are to say things like, well, I don't know why God's letting this happen to me. Why is God doing this to me? If that's even in your consciousness, you're still operating out of a victim mentality. And let me tell you, we've all got sad tales, baby. We all do. We could all stand up here and tell our stories, and we'd be crying in about 10 minutes. And it's and without even embellishing, we've all, you know, it rains on the just and the unjust. That is a given. Jesus said, John 16:33, in the world you will have tribulation. Not maybe, but you will. It's called life. But if you're operating out of a victim mentality, then you can't complain when the world victimizes you, because you're the thermostat of your life. You're seeing everything as a victim. you're taking everything personally. That's the great thing about that book, The Four Agreements. That's the thing that's worth it to me about that book. Don't take anything personal. Because when somebody comes at you about something, it's about them. It's not about you. I realized that in about my 1,000th hate letter I read when I first came out. And I remember thinking, this isn't my problem. This is their problem. I don't have a problem with God. Y'all are wrestling with your own interpretation of scriptures. I'm fine. God and I are fine. God and I are enjoying the day. You're all worked up. Like, sorry. You know, I'm flattered that I matter that much to you, but really, you ought to get a life. I don't really even know you. You ought to. I remember one time back when all the, just everything was going down, you know, so much was happening in my life around 2010. And I remember on Christmas Eve, it was after our Christmas Eve service, I picked up my phone and somebody had written me this long homophobic hate letter. And I didn't even read it. It's the same old stuff I'd read over and over again. And I'm just scrolling down to see, like, dear Lord. And then I deleted it and I thought, how sad, it's Christmas Eve. And this person, I'm not even reading this garbage. They spent their entire Christmas Eve writing me stuff that I've already read 5,000 times. I'm not even paying attention. I don't even know this person. I wanted to say, bless your heart, play some Christmas carols. Get a Christmas tree. You know, like, you should have at least saved this for next week. It's Christmas Eve. You wasted your whole Christmas Eve and I didn't even read it. Be different if it made an impact, like I had some Christmas miracle. Oh, wow, thank you, hate letter person. You opened my eyes. Like, no, I'm gay and you're an idiot. Like, shut up. Like, delete. Move on. What? Contemporary English version. How'd you know that? You can interrupt me anytime you want to, Mr. Marshall. Anytime you want to, you just say what you got to say. No, thank you. Contemporary English version, thank you. I knew it was something. I don't use that one a lot, so I didn't recognize the initials. But I like that it says, it uses the word thoughts. It doesn't use the word heart, because I can't underscore it enough. We've been taught to think a certain way. And something I posted one day this week, it was a quote. It says, if you want to change the way you see things, see the way you see. And I just know that's the truth. That's why even when I was telling you, 4th of July, when it started raining, I didn't rebuke the rain because rain's a good thing. We need rain. I actually talked to the rain, and I said, rain, I love you, and we need you. But I really love it. We walked all the way up here. We want to see the fireworks. Could you just hold off until we see this fireworks show and then rain on? And I'm telling you, it was like a faucet turned off. It's like the rain. I thought, I'm the weather whisperer. That's what I am. But it wasn't like, rain, I'm buying the spirit of rain. I don't want to do that. And then we go into a drought, you know. Like, no, we need the rain. Don't rebuke the rain. Just say, could you just, y'all are beautiful. Rain clouds are beautiful. We love you so much. Just hold off. Let us see the fireworks. And you can even rain on the way home. We don't care. I think that's a better way. You know, I think we misinterpreted, was it James 4:7, where he says, resist the devil and he'll flee from you. We learned this thing about resisting. Okay. But now most of these teachers say what you resist persists. And I think sometimes the harder you fight against something, you're actually sending energy to it. That's one thing these laws of attraction guys say, is that the universe doesn't make a judgment call on whether you're thinking a positive or negative thought. It's just the fact that you're thinking about it so much, and which brings me back to the thing about prayer. Again, not only am I not anti-prayer, prayer is important. I love what BJ did last week. Is he was having he thought he was passing a kidney stone, and from what I hear, it's excruciatingly painful. And what he posted was, I'm doing an experiment in prayer and agreement. And he had people that I don't even think know what prayer is. We're like, okay, I agree with you, whatever. And it worked. I mean, he was here last week. He's here today. So I'm all about prayer. I think prayer is more lateral. I think it's that we do it for one another. When you say, you're in my prayers, that's not an empty thing. That's saying, I'm thinking about you. I'm believing for the best for you, whatever. That's not a negative thing. What I'm saying is when you spend too much time, like for instance, if you're praying to get out of debt, and that's the emphasis of your prayer, the energy is going to debt. It's not going to prosperity. The universe is picking up the fact that you're thinking about how much debt you're in. If the doctor gives you a terrible, diagnosis or something, don't concentrate on rebuking the thing. Concentrate on getting your body healthy. Because if you're just like binding the cancer, all you're doing is making the cancer stronger, and it fights you back. So there's nearly like an asymmetrical way to deal with it. It's like, all right, I'm not denying that this thing is in my body, but now I'm speaking health to my body, and I'm finding out there's things you can do. Like what we were talking about last week, even learning what kind of water you drink. Like when the less acidic you become and the more you drink alkaline water, just even that, like cancers can't thrive in an alkaline environment. So there's things you can do. You're wasting your time just rebuking it and getting everybody on the... Sometimes you get a bunch of people on the prayer... Let me tell you what happens. You get a bunch of people on the prayer chain that don't know what they're doing. They'll start telling you how mom and them died of it. They'll start giving you horror stories. They'll start feeling sorry for you. And you don't need that. You know what? Most times when I go visit somebody in intensive care, you know what the first things I do is I make them laugh. I walk in and say, what the heck are you doing in here? And the first thing they do is, because everybody else has been around their bed crying and moaning. You remember when Jesus, he went to raise Jairus' daughter from the dead, and the first thing he did is he put the mourners out. He's trying to raise her from the dead, and they're mourning. He's like, I'm going to need y'all to take that outside because I can't overpower the energy of your mourning. I remember years ago, and I have no idea what ultimately happened to this woman, but I remember I was doing a meeting up in Tennessee somewhere, and I used to travel as an evangelist. This is even before I started Church of the Now. And I was full of myself, and I was like Mr. Faith, whatever. So I went to this little church in Milan, Tennessee, and I remember they said, could you go pray for this woman? This young woman in our church, we love her, and she's dying, and whatever. I said, oh, yeah, absolutely. So we go, and there you cannot believe the oppression that was on this house. I mean, it was just like, it was dark. It was depressing. All the curtains were drawn. It didn't smell clean. It was just like there was nothing conducive to health in this house. So I walked in and introduced myself. I said, people have brought me here to pray for you. Will you let me do what I think is the right thing to do for you? And she said, yeah, that's fine. I said, all right, first of all, do you have any kind of good music at all, like positive music, praise music, whatever? She said, I think there's something. So I went through her record player. This is back when we only had record players. And I found something that was upbeat, whatever, and I put stereo on. And I said, I know I don't know you, but will you just let me do what I'm going to do? She said, yeah. So I go through the house, and I start opening, letting sunlight in. I opened the windows, let a breeze in, opened the front door. And I was outrageous back then. I was walking around her house, and I opened the front door. I said, disease, get out of this house in Jesus' name. And I slammed the door. But I completely changed the atmosphere. I had music going. I had fresh air going. I had sunlight. I didn't see any change in her that much. I mean, she's just kind of like, she was so close to death that she just, it's like, yeah, sure, do whatever you want to do. Buddy, 3 hours later, I'm starting my meeting. She comes walking in. People start screaming because they, you know, they had already told her goodbye. She came walking in. Now, again, she might have died the next day. I don't know. But she came to church that night. And she had her hair fixed. Everybody was like, what in the world? They were planning her funeral. And I'm like, well, just changing your atmosphere a little bit. And I don't know you enough to be heartbroken over you. I mean, frankly, I mean, I don't feel all that much compassion for you because I don't know you. So it's easy. I'm just sort of objectively saying, let's just try this. And if nothing else, if you're going anyway, let's at least, you know, clean up the place a little bit and, you know, leave it looking nice. And you know, the next thing I heard, you know, a few days after is that people came over to the house and helped her clean it up and everything. I said, good. I can't promise you that's, you're not going to have a, still some stuff you got to deal with, but you're going to be a lot closer to getting well just by getting out of this environment. You're just stuck in this thing, and you're around people who are just telling you negative stuff, and they're, you know, you got to put the mourners out. Now, again, I don't know what happened to all these people long term, but I was thinking about it this week. I've told you this story before. First funeral I ever did was right over here on Patterson, Spring Hill, Patterson. Beautiful place. When my parents go, that's, I've already told them, I said, that's where y'all, just so you know, that's where I'm taking y'all. And that's where Margaret Mitchell's funeral, it's beautiful. But I remember the first funeral I ever did was this woman who, she had collapsed. She was in her late 70s. She had collapsed one day. She was a seamstress right over here in Midtown. She walked out of her shop one day and just collapsed on the sidewalk. And so, you know, everybody was saying she's dying. My dad was out of the country. He did a lot of, I was his associate pastor then, but he did a lot of world travel back then. So I took care of a lot of the pastoral stuff. So I go over here to what was then Grady Hospital, and her kids had flown in. They're all planning the funeral. I mean, they're you know, mama's dying, and they're like, people are flying in. And I said, her name was Minnie. I remember I said, can I go visit Minnie? And they didn't like me that much. And they said, yeah, well, you can see her, but she's catatonic. She's like in a coma. I said, well, can I just go have a prayer with her? Because I liked her. She used to come to my Bible study, and she's kind of like a radical, you know, senior citizen. So I go, they said, I could tell they really didn't want me to, but they said, yeah, fine. So I go in, and she's got tubes in her nose, a thing in her mouth. She's like hooked up. There's monitors all around her. She's like that. So I go in. I didn't have, and I could tell that even the ICU nurse wasn't all that thrilled about me being in there because they're trying to do their stuff. I said, I'll be out of here in just a minute. And I got right in here. I said, Minnie. And when I did, she opened her eyes. I said, I just have a minute. I got to ask you, yes or no, do you want to live? And she goes, like that. Because I wanted to say, because your kids are planning your funeral. They're already ordering flowers. And if you're ready to go, that's fine. But, you know, whatever. She's like, no. She couldn't talk. But she's like, oh. I said, all right, I command you to live in Jesus' name. So I go out, and I, you know, again, I'm young and full. I was like 19 at the time. I said, I really think she's going to be okay. And they're like, get out of here, skinny boy with big hair. And I want you to know, she rallied and lived another at least 7 years. I believe it was about 7 years. And when she finally did, I mean, that family was, they were ready for her to go. I mean, they finally, when she finally did go 7 years later, God, I hope they're not, surely none of them would even watch. But she was out, she loved to work in her garden, and she finally passed working in her garden one day. And I went over to the house, and all of her shrubs that she hadn't put out yet were out there. And her oldest daughter said, I kept telling Mama, you keep putting this stuff out here, we're going to find you dead in this garden one day. And I thought, well, you finally, congratulations. It took you another 7 years, but you finally, I couldn't get to that garden in time. If somebody had called me and said she's passed out in the garden, I could have gotten her another 3 years, I think. 3 or 4, maybe. But, you know, when when that oldest daughter is planning your, you know, they already planned that funeral 7 years ago. They're like, no, she's, you ain't visiting her this time. She's going, and she's staying gone. You know, if somebody likes to work in their garden, let them work in their garden. You know what I mean? Like, some, my dad likes to piddle around his yard, whatever, and mom says, well, it really hurts his back and his sciatica. I said, just then give him some Advil, but let him get out there and work, because it's good for him. He likes to walk around and pick up stuff, whatever. It's like, it's not that I'm too lazy to do it. It's like, it's good for him to do it. I don't want him to become incapacitated. So as long as you can keep doing something that you love, that's all a part of taking care of your inner person. I have two quotes and then I'll shut up. By this Leventhal, I like this quote. It says, the closer you come to knowing that you alone create the world of your experience, the more vital it becomes for you to discover just who is doing the creating. Now, let me tell you why it's important to even screen the voices that come into you. Because if people say negative things to you, especially people that you're emotionally connected to, you become very vulnerable to them, and their thoughts become your thoughts. Before you know it, you start thinking the things that they think. So there's like when it's somebody close to me that says something negative, there's something in me that I don't publicly rebuke them, because it's going to be war if I do that. But if they say something inside, I just say, no, I don't receive that. That's not going to be my truth. That's your truth. That's not my truth. And I go ahead and say that because I'm the one that decides who gets to get inside here. Somebody said to me, you're surrounded by yes people. I'm like, yes. Yeah. Took me a long time to get there, but yes, I like yes people. That doesn't mean that I'm just going around doing crazy stuff that nobody can call me on. I'm saying, you know, yeah, you, at a certain point in your life, this should be one of the rewards of becoming a mature person, that you've lived long enough that you don't have to live by peer pressure. And there's certain things you're like, I don't quote every scripture, but there's some little things that Paul put in there that I'm glad he put in there. I like when he said, rebuke not an elder. I'm like, that's a good one, Paul. You lost me on, I suffer not a woman to teach, but rebuke not an elder. I'm going to keep that one. Because there's, you ever heard some young upstart telling you something? You think, who do you think you, what? Like, I'm to a point now, if somebody wants to give me advice about ministry, I think, you better have done some ministry, because you don't even know. I had a relative who actually asked me to hire him to be a church growth consultant. And I said, say what now? This is somebody who's never pastored a church. But I can be hired, and wanted to make more than I was making. And I said, okay, I'm going to have to think about that. I don't really need a church growth consultant. I mean, I started a church. It became mega church. I used to have somebody in my life who used to just lecture me about children who didn't have any children. And one day I said, now let me see, how many kids do you have? Like, oh, that's right, none. And let's see, how many do I have? One, two, three. Oh, four. I have four. You have none. Zero, four. I have four. You have none. So I'm going to need you to stop advising me how I should raise my children. Because I'm not sure I would be open to it if you had four of your own. Because your kids are not mine. But the fact that you have means I just need you to. That's all I need. And you'll notice, the people who have already been down that road, they don't have that much advice for you. People who have already raised children, they're like, go with God. I'm praying for you. Because, baby, they ain't no formula. Well, raise up a child in the way. Yeah, that's good. That's precious. Thank you so much. And again. good stuff. And then finally. Now listen, this isn't what, this may sound a little disjointed because these were actual several quotes that I put together. I wanted to, you'll see what I mean. This is by Dr. Dispenza. I was reading something he was talking about, because we're talking about free your minds. I want to end on this, about negative hormones and how they affect your brain. And he had written several things, stress hormones particularly. So I just kind of put it together and made it all one big quote. The hormones of stress in the long term push the genetic buttons that create disease. Now, this is really important because, look, some things in your body are genetically inherited. I'm not denying that. What I'm saying is there are things that you can do or not do that determine how those genetics are going to play out. Just because your mama died of it doesn't mean you're going to. Even if they find it in your makeup or whatever, it still doesn't mean, it's like, Kim was on call last week and I took my kids to see this, I think I mentioned it to you, this documentary about these triplets that were separated at birth, and it's a very interesting documentary. This psychologist back in the 60s was doing these experiments with twins and triplets, separating them and putting them in different homes to deal with the age-old argument, is it nature or nurture? And the consensus of the movie that it is that it's both. This was what I've always felt. Because one of the three boys committed suicide. And they were asking, were they predisposed to that? And that there's, then when they interviewed the guy's father, you could see how, I could see how somebody's DNA in that environment became a perfect storm for this kind of thing to happen. It's very, very interesting. It's called Perfect Strangers, I believe is what it's called. Three Perfect Strangers. Anyway, I like that he doesn't deny that there are genetic codes in us, but stress makes a lot of things happen. Stress causes things to surface that might not have ever surfaced. I mean, people, look, you know, there was a time that if somebody was HIV or had AIDS, it was like you told them bye. Magic Johnson was diagnosed in 1987 and is still healthy. People are living, you know, living out their entire life now. But I tell you, one thing you learn is take your meds, but there's also certain things you don't want to do to your body because they trigger the disease. And stress, I'm telling you, stress is as deadly as smoking cigarettes. So I'm not saying just throw your medicine away and deny the reality of a disease. I'm saying go to the beach next weekend. Well, Bishop, is it going to heal me? It couldn't hurt. when we live by the hormones of stress and all of the energy goes to these hormonal centers and away from the heart gets starved of energy. What? As long as we are living by the hormones of stress, we are living as a materialist because the hormones of stress cause us to believe that the outer world is more real than the inner world. You know what this makes me think of? You know the story of Mary and Martha in the Gospels? And when Jesus, remember when he challenged Martha? Because Martha comes to Jesus and he says, tell my sister to get in this kitchen and help me. And Jesus kind of sounds sarcastic because he goes, Martha, Martha, you're troubled about many things. And he, instead of agreeing with Martha, he says, your sister has chosen the good part. Now, I don't have siblings, but I can tell you that would probably tick you off to hear Jesus say, because what Jesus is supposed to say is, she needs to realize these people are going to want dinner when you're through talking and we're the host. And what Jesus was saying is you're concentrating on the wrong thing. It's not easy to do, especially if if you're a caretaker of things, it's easy to empathize with Martha. Like, well, that's well and good, but somebody's got to cook dinner. And what he's saying is keep it in balance. Cook dinner, but don't be stressed about it. You know what I've noticed? This happens with so many people. It happened a couple times this week. Because I end up ministering to a lot of people that aren't really a part of Metron. They used to be part of church, and now it is what it is. It's fine. But I'll notice that sometimes when somebody contacts me, they spend so much time apologizing for taking up my time that their apology takes more time than the thing is, like, oh, I know you're busy. I'm so sorry to bother you. I'm like, you've already got my attention. Just tell me what's up. Well, I know, but you're so busy, and I hate it. You're taking more time apologizing. Just say what it is, and I'll tell you if I can do the funeral or do the thing or whatever. Yes, I'm busy. We're all busy. Everybody's busy. It cracks me up. People have never even met Ken. Well, message him. Ask Bishop if so-and-so. And I think, why did they just ask me? Because they think you're busy. Oh, my Lord. Like, they've never even met you, and they know me. I know, but I know he's so busy. Like, well, I'm glad y'all think I'm that busy. Yeah. In all of his leisure time. It's just funny. Anyway, we wrap this up. The hormones of stress make us feel separate from possibility of learning, creation, and trust. If the hormones of stress are like a narcotic and we could turn on the stress response just by thought alone, then we could get addicted to our thoughts. That's one thing that he says I think is very important. And when he said it, it penetrated my heart when I heard him in person. He said, we get so addicted to feelings, even negative feelings, that we don't feel like ourselves if we don't feel that negative feeling. And he said it's actually an addiction. You have to break the feeling because it feels so familiar to you. You don't feel like yourself if you don't feel that. And I thought, wow. Okay. That was worth whatever I just paid for this seminar. Because that, I'll take that. And I've caught myself on things. I think, you know, why am I even, I don't even really believe this anymore. Why am I still thinking this? It's because it feels familiar. And, you know, when the snake sheds its skin, and the butterfly leaves the cocoon, you can't go back to what you were, you know. People can get addicted to the adrenaline and the stress hormones, and they start using the problems and conditions in their life to reaffirm their emotional addiction so they can remember who they think they are. What is it, Psalm 126, where the Lord turned the captivity of Zion, we were as them that dreamed? The Israelites had been slaves for so long, they didn't know how not to feel like slaves. The bad circumstances, the bad relationship, the bad job, all of that is in place because the person needs that to reaffirm their emotional addiction. You got to be a grown, you got to put your big boy pants on to hear that. Because our instinct is to say, but you don't know how bad it's been. I'm sure it has been. And even reaching out to somebody to have a fellow feeling with you of empathy, that's normal. I'm not telling you not to express yourself. Sometimes you just need somebody else to know, you know, what's happening. But then once they know it, it's time to, you have to get out of that. Because all you're doing is you see it and say it and see it. You just, that cycle is rolling so much that it's like on autopilot now. And so you just live, don't you know those people that just live in drama? Every time you see them, it's like, good God, do you just like make up stuff? I mean, you know, everybody has a little drama now and then, but if it's just non-stop drama all the time, baby, it's you. It's not the devil. I miss him too. It was so, the devil's such a great luxury to have in your life. You can just blame everything on him. That old devil. It's like, oh, I miss him so much. But But when you realize, oh, it's really not him. That was me. I was the devil. You can say, yeah, the devil made me do it, and the devil was me. It's hard. You'll die when you first let that thing bite you. It'll kill you. But when you're resurrected, you'll come out of it victim. You'll just be free from victimization. You'll be like, oh, I've already died that death, and now I don't. I completely own my life. I own it all. And we're gonna. I want to end on that because I want to. This is the segue. Beginning right now, those of you that are going on, even if you're not going to the meditation weekend, then at least if you can't physically go, then at least get on the same wavelength with us and find a way to meditate in your own space, okay? Because I think we're connected enough that if you can't be there in person, you can still tap into what we're going to experience. So I don't want to feel like this is an exclusive thing that if you didn't get to go, you know, you're missing out. I think everybody should go. But if you can't, then at least be meditative, and I want you to enter it right now. That's why I said, if you're going next weekend, I'd like for you to be here today. That's why the hashtag was, it's important. I want you to not be unrealistic. You're going to have to go to work this week, and you'll be in traffic, and blah, blah, blah. But I want you to make the decision to not put yourself in a place where stress hormones are going to kick in, okay? I want you to, let's just go ahead and speak over this week as we lead up to the meditation. And I might not even meditate today. I might just leave it like here, and then I'll meet you on the beach. But if it's something that's stressful, I want you to postpone it or find a way to resolve it as quickly as you can. I want you to, by the time I see you on Saturday night, I want everybody to be in a relaxed state. I want you to be laid back. If you can, leave as early as you can so that you're not frantic trying to, it's easy to find, but I want you to, it's an easy drive, you know, leave as early as you can so you're not, and if, you know, if, like I noticed, you had to pick up your friend last time from the airport, but you got there a little bit late, and it's fine. You guys entered right in. So if it's something beyond your control, then deal with it. But if you can get there, I want you to relax. I want you to take care of yourself this week. I want you to eat well. I want you to hydrate. And I'm telling you, it's important. It's not a fad. It's like it's very important. I want your brains to be, you know, your brain's like a sponge, and it can literally dry out if you don't keep it hydrated. They don't think the hydration could do away with Alzheimer's, but a lot of dementia and Alzheimer's patients are much more advanced because of dehydration, because they, a lot of times elderly people don't, they just stop drinking water, and it's just not on their radar screen, and your brain literally dries out. So keep yourself hydrated. If you want to start introducing some proteins back in your diet this week, that's fine. I'm going to. I'm going to have chicken today. But stay healthy. I want you to, you know, don't just pig out this week. Keep, like, you, those of you that did good last week, don't blow that. It's like, you know what I've noticed since I've been eating right, and just, it hasn't even been difficult. When I get hungry, I don't feel desperate when I'm hungry. I'm just like, I'm hungry. I think I need to eat. Whereas before, when I was full of sugar and carbs, it was just like, if I don't eat, I'm going to die. And I'd be all depressed and hangry. I don't feel that way now. I just think, I could eat. It's time to eat. And it's interesting how your body just really, yeah, right, right. And I don't feel like I'm on this blood sugar roller coaster now. And I'm not. And furthermore, when I was talking about resisting, I don't believe in making this big declaration. I'll never eat meat again. I think that's unrealistic. I don't want to say that, because when you put that out there, it's like it's unnecessary. And so it's better just to say, I don't want it. I would eat it if I wanted it, but I'm fine. And nobody needs to shame anybody else. If somebody's not on your page. That's their body. Let them work out their own salvation. I'm saying for those of you that are, if you're going to go this week, because you've obviously had to go to some expense and take some time off, whatever, then make it everything it can be. And so go ahead and just, we're not going to officially do a meditation today, but I want you to go ahead and like start being conscious of your breathing, conscious of your thoughts. If you're going to post something positive. Don't get into something with somebody. By the time you get there Saturday, I want you mellowed out. Whatever you have to do to get there, that's your journey. Just don't do anything illegal or it's going to endanger anybody else. Keep a designated driver if you need to. But I want you relaxed. Let's all stand. And the whole point of this teaching this month was to lead us up to this weekend. So right now we consciously and intentionally enter a meditative consciousness. And I speak that over our Monday and our Tuesday and our Wednesday and our Thursday and our Friday and next weekend. I say that your bodies are well, that you're going to be rested and hydrated. You're going to think positive thoughts. You're going to say positive words. Surround yourself with positive people. Don't feel guilty about being happy and doing what makes you happy. Happiness is a holy thing. So be happy and don't make any apology for it. If it makes you happy, it's probably the right thing for you. So I call your mind at peace. I call your spirit at peace. I call your thoughts at peace. And we're just going to end with that today. We're not even going to end with we don't need to do the thing. You know what to do. Go give online. If you're making a check, Danny will receive. If you have cash, pay it forward. If you want to bless Alex, you can do that. I know that we've enjoyed having him. I want you to leave in peace. 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 Peace to your heart. Peace to your mind. Peace to your emotions. Peace to your memories. Just peace. Your body's at peace. Your heart is at peace. Your internal organs are at peace. Your bones are at peace. Your brain, your eyes, your ears, your tongue, your fingers, your toes. Peace is in every cell of your body. Your mind is free. Your mind is at rest. I bless your silence. If you need to even just not be as talkative this week, it's fine. Just come into a meditative state. Come into peace. Come into an attitude of mindfulness. I bless your time outside. If you go outside, get some fresh air, get some sunshine. Just change your environment if you need to, but stay in peace. Exercise, but stay in peace. Go to work, but work in peace. Drive in your car, but drive in peace. Listen to music that's going to keep you harmoniously in peace. I'll see you on St. Simon's.